You went through the process. Andrea, they're breaking her. And in these last few seconds, Seth, the agony we watch Andrea, who had been put in the hole, who had gone on hunger strike, saying, after they released her, why couldn't she have been waiting for her court date all this time from home?
You know, ICE detention is in many ways unique in the complex of ways that we lock people up in the United States, in that it is routinely the case that people don't know how long they will be held. They don't know when they will be released. People can be held for many months and sometimes multiple years. And this is a detention system that is at the discretion of ICE. ICE can decide to hold people or not. Everybody who's in ICE detention could be released and allowed to be home with their families, and that's a decision that the government makes
every day. We have to leave it there, but you can see the documentary, The Facility, at MSNBC and Field of Vision. Seth Fried Wessler and Nielsen Barona, thank you. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
To KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
The time is 8 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is The Gap.
Girls, we run this.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Tammy, and with me on the line is the lovely Althea. Hello, Althea.
Hello. Good morning.
How's it going?
Happy I can be here. Yeah, happy I can be here, even though I am on the phone today.
It's okay. We won't hold that against you today.
Thank you.
Hope that everyone is doing well and, getting the cobwebs out and getting those joints oiled up. I don't know what metaphor I'm trying to go with.
I don't know if you can, well, I guess maybe not like your physical body joints you probably can't oil, but you know, like some joinery in your furniture maybe needs oiling.
You can always moisturize.
Stretch out your joints? Oh, moisturizing is good.
That's not what I meant, but
Tammy?
it's also a thing you can do. I'm all right. I am ready for an awesome show. Glad to be here. We were off last week, just stoked to be here. Stoked for a great show. And yes, Althea, happy to be back for sure. For new or first time listeners of the show, this is The Gap. And today, well, usually we do take our show in two parts. The first part is either a news roundup or interviews, and then second part is when we open up the phone lines for a community question and community conversation. Today we're going to be kind of highlighting and dissecting some articles that came out this week.
Yeah, I'm super excited. Are you down to jump into the first one?
Oh, we gladly will jump into the first one.
Okay, yeah. So this first story is actually related to a prior show of ours. If you listen to the episode where we interviewed Taylor from Ridwell, like, get excited. And if you missed that one, you can always go back and find it online, kw.fm. Because Willamette Week published this piece about Ridwell. It's called Who's Afraid of a Ridwell Box, I believe. It was their cover story. And basically, what is Ridwell? It's a business that is newer to Portland, just a little less than a year old, where people can subscribe to be a part of their service to have some of their waste go into like a reuse stream rather than garbage. So Who's Afraid of a Ridwell Box? They'll put a white box on your front porch, and you can dispose of you know, things that normally you can't get rid of in the city. So like clamshells, those plastic, like things that you would get like berries in at the grocery store, those can't be recycled. So,
but light bulbs
Ridwell
also
recycles them. Yeah. Plastic film. Anyway, there's a whole bunch of different ones. But this article was interesting because it sort of details how city garbage haulers are annoyed at Ridwell, this kind of upstart, right, for not having to go through the same permit processes that they do and having to abide by the same city regulation.
Which I think in a lot of ways makes sense because, you know, you have to kind of jump through hoops for the trash haulers. They, you know, kind of jump through hoops and state a code when it comes to gaining the contracts with the city. So I think, at least the impression that I got from their article, it was kind of like, well, they're just coming in here, kind of doing whatever they want to do. And moreover, the city is allowing them to do it by changing up the codes and ordinance and stuff, which is interesting because it's not, they're filling a gap that it was left behind. So it was interesting to see the point of view from the people who have been doing this for a long time, from the city, the trash haulers from the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and right, like you were saying, you know, garbage haulers in the city, they have to compete for those contracts, and they also have to service everyone. Whatever their profit margin is going to be is based on what the rate is, which, and that's pegged by the city and can't like increase so much year over year. Compare that to Ridwell, which is elective. It's people who can afford paying an extra $12 a month, not just to have stuff taken away, but that they're going to a particular place, which I think is interesting because there's like a part in the article where they're like talking about how they're like, what's going on, you know? We also take away plastic film. It's like, well, you put the plastic, you're not recycling the plastic film though, and that's kind of what people are interested in.
Right, and another through line, and we'll get to it in just a moment, is that was mentioned is that the lack of training when it comes to the folks that are picking up the trash, which can in itself pose issues. And I think a lot of the what is called jobs within the quote unquote gig economy do have that. I'd say, kind of like it's almost dangerous to not give someone training for a job, and the more physical that it gets, especially if like you're driving around and stuff. But yeah, these are just kind of some of the points from the city trash haulers, and I think that they're, you know, very good points to be brought up. But in my personal opinion, I think that there is room for both to exist, and that this came kind of from a need of the community, from the community needs. And I think if you are able to pay extra money, then maybe do that, you know, like that's just kind of my opinion right now.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, like two things I would point out, is that, you know, the reason that Ridwell is even like moderately successful is because there's stuff that the city doesn't take. You know, they're not picking up clamshells. That's a uniquely Portland problem, as we discussed with Taylor. And the trash haulers also kind of allude to the idea, it's like, where are they even taking this stuff? What are they even doing? And granted, they probably should have like permits with the city and whatever, but they also have like extensive transparency documentation that was like a big deal when they released it. So it's like not that they're like, you know, it's not a situation where they're charging people to take trash that the garbage haulers would otherwise take and then putting it in a landfill, right? Like there is a net benefit. And I think that, you know, there definitely is something to be said about the fact that it's like for folks who can't afford it, for sure. But I don't know that I think it would be wrong to say that it has a net negative impact because it is like a paid service, you know? That isn't it better that those things that would normally end up in a landfill are getting into a reuse stream? I kind of think that it is. And that it's pushing the city to consider picking up clamshells, to try to address some of these things that Ridwell's picking up right now because people are looking for a solution to them.
Yeah, definitely. Kind of opened up the doors, and now maybe those things can be looked at as opposed to just kind of like, well, we don't like that you're doing this. It's like, okay, we'll do something. And hopefully, you know, there'll be either an alternative or an additional option for people who can't pay the monthly fee, the subscription fee from Ridwell. So, you know, I'm going to keep an eye out for that, because I would love to be able to recycle all of my stuff that that doesn't otherwise get recycled properly. So,
Like that convenience factor for sure. And I mean, one other thing that's just kind of interesting is that, you know, because they cover like the Portland metro area up into Washington as well. And there's been some places where they have been like told that you're not allowed to service here. I think Lake Oswego like immediately sided with their trash haulers and said, no, Ridwell's not allowed to be here. I think they might be there anyway, but it's interesting that like, you know, not like, I think Portland has been compared to other like municipalities, Clackamas County, Lake Oswego, for example, has been like relatively permissive to allow them to be reusing and diverting all this waste.
Right. And they, you know, they can totally do that. It's a service that the city can say, nope, not interested. Or like in this instance, yes, we're very interested. And it's very eye-opening to see when private companies come into these public spaces, how they are welcomed or how they're viewed, and just kind of what the complaints are around it. And I guess that kind of can slide us to our second instance of this theme that we're looking at, of when private businesses come into the public space. And there was a three-part report from OPB, and it was very interesting, incredibly eye-opening, and it was talking, highlighting, and kind of detailing some of the private security firms that are found in downtown, more specifically Echelon, which is found in Old Town. Oh my goodness. Part three was just published this morning at 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. It's online and available to read. But oh my. Oh my.
Yeah. Me and Tammy have been kind of like geeking out on this all week, so we're really excited to talk about it.
Yeah. It's, where do we start? Well, I guess we can start with what is Echelon? And that is a private security firm that was hired to clean up, quote unquote, and secure downtown. And there's been a lot of problems with them, as well as some positive community feedback. And that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, you want me to run down some of the stuff?
Sure thing.
Yeah, so Echelon was started in 2019, but from summer 2020 on, they picked up a bunch of different like private clients in Old Town, Chinatown area. I think they have at least 26. OPB doesn't detail that specifically. But what kind of like kicked off, I think, the interest in it was that this property owner named John DiLorenzo hired Echelon to investigate a homeless encampment on Southwest 12th and Taylor to try to find criminal activity so they could push the city to remove it. They ended up giving this 46-page dossier to Sam Adams, who works in the mayor's office and is a former Portland mayor, and 2 weeks later, that camp is gone. To quote from the article, the resulting 46-page dossier obtained by OPB through a records request detailed alleged illegal activity, what investigators deemed evidence of drug dealing, prostitution, and human trafficking within the camp, as well as more innocuous aspects of the residents' lives, their visitors, their romantic entanglements, the extent of ash accumulated in their barbecue, end quote. So that is kind of like what piqued the interest, right? That there's this relatively like established camp on Southwest 12th and Taylor. A 46-page like private investigation is done with it. That's turned over to the city. 2 weeks later, it's gone. And so really, like, then OPB goes into like, what is Echelon doing and how are they being utilized by the community?
Go ahead, please. I just wanted to add that in the third part that was published today, it seems like the investigation itself that was done through the private security firm Echelon, there's like some sketchy stuff that they did, and it seemed like they may have obtained some of the information just straight up illegally. And because there aren't cops, there's very little to almost no checks and balances, and because of that, and they're like just we'll talk about the training, which is only, what was it, 28 hours of training? Armed guards, 38 hours of training, okay? And they are pretty much don't know enough about the campers' rights, and thusly they continue to violate them. And a point that was the specific point that was made is that there's just no constitutional arguments to be had. So when these guards come and they violate Fourth Amendment rights, which the campers do have, for freedom from unreasonable search, that doesn't even compute. That doesn't even come to the, like, that's not even part of the equation for the guards. So while there wasn't an actual crime that happened to prompt the investigation, it happened anyways. And it's really, it seems really shady. Although there were reports of what I think it was specifically gunfire that was heard from the neighbors. And again, to like say that like there isn't crime at all, I think would be kind of a disservice, but no actual crime prompted the investigation, which unlike cops, the police bureau has to have a crime a crime has to happen to prompt the investigation. So yes, please, Althea,
right.
Go ahead.
They have to have that like reasonable suspicion, yeah, rather than like fishing around, which do they always abide by that? Great question. But let's get back to Echelon. So, I mean, I think it's important to point out that we're talking about, you know, the big businesses, the really rich guys, and also smaller businesses are using Echelon. And a lot of them said that they have reprogrammed like the security system on their business to go ping Echelon, not to call 911, because the cops are not, their response times are pretty poor. They're not addressing the issues directly that these business owners are concerned about. But even so, Echelon is not a public safety agency, even if, you know, their clients are treating them that way. A lot of, you know, folks who employ them in these articles are talking relatively positively, you know, like they're sort of like an old fashioned beat cop walking up and down the block, you know, who they are, you know, like, and that they have these anecdotes of them, you know, giving a woman a sandwich to like get her away from a particular area, you know, like that there are these like positive anecdotes and that folks are relatively happy with the service. But trying to like figure out what Echelon is doing is relatively difficult because they're a private security firm. And basically the records that are publicly available come from police records of what Echelon has been up to. So this is from the article again. It says, quote, over 100 pages of police records reviewed by OPB show that in the last year and a half, Echelon guards have batoned a homeless woman and torn apart a homeless camp without reporting the incidents, tried to kick sleeping campers off a public sidewalk without the legal grounds to do so, and repeatedly made demonstrably false statements to law enforcement. The Multnomah County District Attorney's Office will no longer bring charges in any criminal case that hinges on testimony from Echelon guards without substantial evidence that can, quote, assure the accuracy of their statements. So the DA won't even listen to them anymore.
Which is really troubling, because the way that, like, this should, the process for this is that there's an incident happens, and then the cops are called onto the scene, and then the guards give their testimony, and then if an arrest happens through there, if it happens through there, then, you know, it goes up to further up the line for the DA for prosecution. But the fact that the DA's office, this is a policy that they have, that they are, that if a testimony hinges on an Echelon guard, then they're just going to not use it. That's terrifying. And again, these are armed people on the streets.
Right. Yeah. They've learned enough, I suppose, from these instances that they don't just like take them at their word. And the way that these like arrests and how the cops really get involved is that, you know, if there's quote unquote suspected criminal activity, what Echelon guards will do is they'll do a citizen's arrest, which, boy, if that word doesn't just immediately make me laugh, because maybe until this week I was pretty convinced that like that was a myth. But they'll do a citizen's arrest because if there's a suspicion of a crime, they'll call the cops and they tell the cops what happened, and the cops will usually like arrest that person. But you know, and that the documentation, I think, is interesting, is coming from the Portland police, kind of like picking up the pieces of what Echelon Echelon has been up to. And it's very interesting because in some ways, I mean, what these guards have been doing, like there's this like investigation aspect, there's like just walking the block, there's responding to, you know, any kind of like break-in or security breach, but there's also like, you know, guarding these businesses. And in some ways, you know, because you have now business owners paying a premium to ensure that there are guards at their establishment, it is like in some ways kind of like a privatized clean and safe. I know you wanted to dissect that a little bit, Tammy.
Yeah, definitely, because there's a lot of different entities and some of them do cross over and some of them don't. So, and we've talked about all of these on the program, so you can go to kbo.fm/gap to hear the episodes. But we have the, I want to start with the Clean and Safe, and they contract with the city and businesses in the Clean and Safe district, mostly the 213 block area, and they pay the city a fee for the service, which includes cleanup, graffiti removal, apparently market research and retail advocacy, as well as security. And this is around Southwest 4th, 11th through Burnside and up through Northwest Lovejoy and Broadway. The Portland response team, and they're pretty transparent because they have the contract with the city. Then they.
I wouldn't say that they're pretty transparent, but they're not incredibly opaque. How about that?
Okay, cool.
Translucent, maybe.
Okay, cool. There is some info that can be found as opposed to in comparison to Echelon, of course. Then you have the Portland Street Response, which is found on the east side, and that is where you call 911 and ask specifically for the Portland street responders, and they handle emergencies around mental health crisis, intoxication, yelling, people who are unresponsive, but they are restricted and can't come to the scene if there is a weapon, obstruction of traffic, that's to say if there's someone in traffic or situation within traffic, on private property, so they can only go to public property. The point of the street responders is to provide a more compassionate response when facing people who are unhoused and suffering from mental illness. And they are made up of community health workers, crisis responders, peer support specialists, and a firefighter. And again, like these are, you can go online and see, kind of read about the people who are part of it. And it really, from the images and all of that, it really just feels like community like members just helping people. And this is still in a pilot stage. Hopefully, it will actually go into citywide next year in March.
It will. They passed the budget for that.
Girl, you know how it goes. They passed the budget all of a sudden. Someone sneezed and forgot, you know? And then, of course, the company that we're talking about now is Echelon, which is one of the private security firms, is a private security company that is paid for by rate payers, which is basically the businesses. From reading a little bit, it seems like they offer different layers or levels of protection, for the lack of a better word. So it's not just a flat fee, it seems like. And Clean and Safe is, it's really kind of mind-blowing because on top of paying regular taxes, they're also paying an extra fee for Clean and Safe just for basically existing where they exist. And it's really messed up because it's sure, it's a police problem, but more than anything at the forefront, this is a housing crisis. This isn't the people that are homeless that are the issue. That is not the issue, not at all. It is the housing issue. And personally, and I'm gonna get real, my personal opinion is if the cops want to find anyone to be responsible for this, they can go knock on Dan Ryan's house. That's all I got to say. Yes, Althea, please go on. No, I'm serious. This is, if the DA office wants to arrest someone, they can dismiss and arrest and ask for all of this stuff. But the thing is, Echelon is a private security company. And it stems from the need for it stems from a very serious neglect of humans, you know? And the criminals may be in camps, they may be in Echelon, they may be in the police department, but the real criminality, in my opinion, is that Commissioner Ryan is still walking free in his house. It's an inhumane treatment that stems from a notion that property and capital must be protected. And what we end up doing is that the DA ends up saying, the DA ends up saying that these companies need to demonstrate, like Echelon need to demonstrate their commitment to safety and dignity of people with whom they interact, and continue to say if this, if existing law is insufficient, it should be strengthened. What? No. Put people in housing. And then that's it's not put people in housing. And then we'll see if all these problems will still be.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's these overlapping issues. I have a quote from the article here. One of the business owners, Jesse Burke. Burke is blunt. Portland has put itself in a, quote, atrocious situation with a cohort of private businesses running what amounts to its own police force. But she said she cannot wait for the city to figure out how to run its own police department. She says, private sector is like, hey, you still need order, so you fill the gap yourself privately. Right now we pay taxes for police, we pay in our 213 blocks where Clean and Safe is an additional tax, and we pay for private security, end quote. So that's from the article.
Go ahead.
I mean, it's also a situation where, like you were mentioning, these different, like Clean and Safe, Street Response, Echelon, all are different things kind of targeting a similar problem, but and there should be probably a lot of different overlapping solutions to the issue that the city's facing, but fundamentally leadership is very much like needed. What direction are we really going in?
Right. And this is definitely a response to the gaps that are left behind by elected officials. And I'm not seeing any, I'm just saying, Dan Ryan, the commissioner for Portland Housing Bureau, where you at? What's up? This is all on you, in my opinion. And yes, in my opinion, that's all I want to say. It just gets me really riled up because it's all of these just go circles and circle and circle. Security, accountability, transparency, housing. Period. That's it. Put people in housing. Period. You know, there's all these like ways that both De Lorenzo, I mean, everyone is just trying to kind of pass the buck and saying, oh, it's a police department, oh, it's Echelon, oh, it's the DA, oh, it's, no, put people in housing is just what I got to say about it. But yes, we can move forward.
Okay. yeah, because we have a little bit more to say about Echelon itself, and then in a little bit, we're going to open up the phone lines for our community members to weigh in on this. So yeah, right, these business owners are contracting out private security because police, homeless services are not addressing the issues that they're facing with their business, you know, with their livelihood. But because there's like this lack of transparency for Echelon, they may not even know that there are these mounting stories of misconduct and that Echelon is actually quite difficult to be held accountable, partially due to the way that like private security firms are regulated by the state government, which is so fascinating because it really riles me up when, you know, there's like some pretty fundamental aspects of law where like it's really fast and loose here in Oregon. Campaign finance is another one, which we'll get to. So the only police records, the only records that are like easily attainable from a journalistic perspective are from police records taking on Echelon citizen arrests, but the DA won't take their word for things anymore. I believe it was a different security company, but they also talked about falsifying trespassing documents to show campers that they were going to be swept. There was a survey of Echelon guards that there was like contradictory understanding of what is and isn't public and private space. This is a wild quote from the article. A spokesperson for the Portland Police said there are exceptions for an alcove or a recessed doorway, but for the most part, quote, camping on a sidewalk is not trespassing. The police are saying that it's fine. I just thought that was like a wild juxtaposition. Yeah. And so, right, the DA creates this new policy. Maybe, Tammy, should we talk about like the training aspect and how that's regulated, because security guards, you know, private security guards and police are actually trained by the same state agency, but they're held to very different standards. If you're a private security guard, you can get 38 hours of training and an annual refresher course. But in any kind of cop you want to be in Oregon, you have to do 16 weeks of training, which is a pretty big difference. Not to say that, you know, the 16 weeks is enough, but it is quite different than less than a full-time job for a week to become a security guard.
Right. And like you said, they are armed and, you know, they basically, again, they are being used by the private businesses as a almost private army or, you know, private security force, thusly taking over, you know, the police job with only 38 hours of training. So essentially they're taking over the roles of cops without the same amount of training, not like the training is enough to begin with. And, you know, just to kind of go over what you were saying with Oregon and the way that the state law and city law treats private businesses is that, or the private guards, is that the guards aren't required to do incident reportings, and the security company themselves are not required to shut down because of quote unquote repeat offenses, but they can fire the guards. So, you know, like you were mentioning, the falsifying the city, the sweeping, the guard falsified the actual seal, the city seal on this document, which made it an illegal criminal activity, and they got fired, but the company is still doing its thing. So, oh, and also, when asked for a manual or a worker's handbook from Echelon, there was none, because I think they said this is pretty new and we just don't have one. And it's really, there it is. I see it right here. And the quote is, the company does not have an employee handbook, policy manual, or guidebook for policies and procedures. So terrifying. Meanwhile, these people, again, are armed on the streets. And there's like video and footage of some of the incidents that they're having with campers. And they're like really not okay. They're not okay. Just don't treat people like this ever, period. I want to talk a little bit about People for Portland, which is was mentioned in the third part, which was again published this morning. And there is a part where this first of all, let me just say, Ted Wheeler's office they seem to really enjoy Echelon and all the services that they have, and Sam Adams / City Hall seems to want to at some maybe extend Echelon in their services. And there was a conversation that was had with city officials and Echelon talking about the dossier and the investigation and the reports from there. And they were talking about maybe publishing it to the public through the media. And that in itself, it just goes to show it's manipulative, you know, and again, it doesn't address anything. And I think that if they ended up not doing that, but I think it just goes to show how this whole situation has turned very politicized, and it's being used as a tool to dehumanize humans that are most vulnerable in winter. Like, I don't, you know, it doesn't address anything. And I think that, and it was also kind of like, you know, mentioned in the article that if this dossier was made public and available, perhaps it will sway Portlanders to want to hire more cops, because as Sam Adams says, you can't tell which are dangerous camps and which are safe camps, as though living outside is safe at all.
Yeah.
Oh, Sam Adams.
Mm-mm. Oh, Sam Adams. Let's not get Tammy too started on Sam Adams, maybe.
Like, yeah, I'm not. I'm going to simmer down.
there's a little too much there, but right. So there's this massive dossier of information about this one particular camp. They bring the dossier to the city, and Sam Adams pulls together a meeting with him, police chief Chuck Lavelle, I think a deputy chief, and a staffer in like the sustainability livability office. And so that staffer like was uncomfortable and like recounted it to their boss. But it raises some very interesting questions about the relationship between City Hall and People for Portland, this campaign, which is a 501c4 PAC, I guess, political action, whatever. So they don't have to disclose their donors. And as Tammy was alluding to, like, People for Portland, if you've seen their ads, it's very much like, it makes me angry even talking about the most innocuous parts of their ads, because I think that they make me feel frustrated. How about that? But they're like, don't you miss when Portland was just known for the carpet at the airport? And then they'll show you like sinister black and white pictures of like camp, and they're like, tell your elected leaders to do something about this, right? And you know, with this idea that, you know, the reason that there are homeless encampments is because they're the police. We need more cops. Which, granted, there was a study out this week or the week before in Portland specifically that demonstrated that more cops don't equal less crime. So it's not, you know, backed by the science. How about that? But yeah, the People for Portland, they were talking about how to strategically potentially give this dossier, this information, which, as we mentioned, could have been, if it was done by a cop, would have had some legal breaches of folks' rights to not be, you know, unreasonably searched by their government. There's like photos from inside folks' tents about what stuff they had in there, which, you know, you can't do if you're an agent of the law. How about that? But potentially giving that to People for Portland to try to have them spin it into something that could convince folks to want to hire back more cops.
Right. And their conversation was to maybe get someone, get that info to the folks at People for Portland. And DeLorenzo, who was the one, I'm not sure if he paid what his actual connection.
I think he just funded the dossier, because he owned the apartment building across the street, I believe.
Yeah.
And asked that his echelon people would look at it.
Yeah, and he said in the article that he's not part of People for Portland, but it's given me, I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you meddling kids vibes. Just saying. I'm just asking questions. But I think that we are going to take a very, very, very quick musical break and then get back to our second part, in which we are going to open up the phone lines for you to tell us what you think about Echelon filling the gap where city services don't, and just generally private businesses when it comes to very, very necessary public services. This is The Gap on KBOO Portland. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay tuned. Back here on The Gap. Althea, are you there with me?
I surely am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can surely hear you. So we just finished talking a bit about Echelon and some of the findings from a recent OPB three-part article that was written. Great fantastic article. I learned a lot, and I have even more questions than I did before. We want to open up the phone lines for you to give us your input about this, and you know, private businesses filling in the gaps where city services don't or are missing. The phone number is 503-231-8187. Again, 503-231-8187.
Yeah, I'm very interested to hear what folks have to say. I mean, obviously I think that there's layers to it, you know, and I think that it's a great topic. If you do want to call in, 503-231-8187, let us know what you think about Echelon or, you know, private businesses more generally filling in those gaps where city services are lacking. And I'm not going to totally go into it because it's a rant that I have done before, but Portland is kind of a uniquely structured to have some pretty weird gaps that may not necessarily happen in other cities, but you know, sometimes that happens as well. So 503-231-8187, let us know what your thoughts are, if you've been following this article series, and what your reaction is.
Yes, and I think, you know, we started off talking about Ridwell a little bit, and I while I know that there's like vast differences in the services that Ridwell provides, and I don't even want to conflate the two in any way whatsoever, but the fact remains that exactly like Althea just described, there are these gaps that the community needs to get filled, and we are starting to get some callers. So Althea, you take it right now.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely did not want to draw like a direct line between the two, but I think that you would be hard pressed to say that, you know, private business enterprise, you know, filling in any kind of like market where there is a market is always a bad thing, especially when it can, you know, spur publicly available services to get their act together, to like become, you know, better servicing their community and stuff like that.
Right. And you know, there's on top of the private businesses, there's also I just want to, you know, take a second and appreciate the grassroots movements and all of the decentralized, the mutual aids that have been helping people that are suffering from being neglected by, you know, the people who are supposedly supposed to run this town or whatever it is that they're doing, because I'm not quite sure what's happening. And so shout out to them for existing and for making life a little bit, I don't even know if manageable is the word, because as we're seeing with the elements, harassment, the weather alone, we had record weather in the summertime. I don't even want to think about what's going to happen in the wintertime, and to just kind of say, oh well, you know, just as long as these people, this community, just, you know, kind of goes and deals with it on their own, and then we'll be over here and take care of ourselves. But it's, you're an elected official for everyone, and especially the most the most vulnerable, the most marginalized. Like, I don't understand this condescending thing of like, that's coming from the mayor's office of, oh well, you know, some camps are good camps and some are dangerous camps. What? You're the danger for putting people on the streets. What?
Yeah, there's quite a few lines in this article series that are kind of like, hang on, wait, what did you say?
Yeah, there's some definitely memorable quotes. And again, we'd love to hear your opinion and perspective on this. 503-231-8187 is the phone number.
Yeah, there was a part that I skipped over, but this one woman who was like beaten with a baton after allegedly throwing a yogurt container at an Echelon guard who was destroying her stuff. In the article, it says, quote, during a police follow-up investigation, the guard denied initially striking Hoffman and said he was trying to, quote, create space with the baton. I had it in my hand. I didn't hit her with it, he told police, but it did hit her, which is, I mean, that one's just wild. I don't even really know what to say about that one other than what the heck, you know?
The violence that
because
is...
Because that is... Yeah, the violence and that, like, obscuring the violence. I mean, look, you know, we're in a bad situation when we're like, well, but at least the cops do this, right? Like holding up the cops as some kind of shining example. But at the very least, if they like have some incident of physical force, they do have to write it down. Echelon, you like records of, they don't have to recreate any kind of records of that kind of stuff, which like is maybe one thing if you're talking about like a mall cop on a Segway, a rent-a-cop without any power, but clearly they have run of this entire area.
And they, and the fact that the businesses are seeing changes, and it's, you know, they did, the some of the business the people that are using these services did mention that like the discomfort that they feel around hiring these services. And again, to pretend like there isn't a serious issue around housing in downtown Portland is not true. Like there is a serious problem, and it needs to get resolved immediately, because if this is the response, then it's just going to end up in more deaths. And as we see, like, marginalized people are going to die. Like this is the milieu, the breeding ground for something like this to happen. And it has happened, and people are, and again, there's images and the harassment and the violence that, and this isn't even like state violence. This is what's like blowing my mind, is that there are people with quote unquote good intentions that just want better for themselves that are using this force to, as protection against people that are just incredibly vulnerable. Like it just, it's so incredibly layered. And again, the issue in my opinion is the housing, is not the, well, what are they doing? Well, what's in the camp? Well, what time would, well, what you, well, this, what did this person do for them to get attacked by the guard? Well, we can dance as much as we want around it. We can, you know, dance as much as we want, but the music is going to stop one day, and then we're all going to be, yeah, SOL, you know?
Awesome. Yeah. I'm going to try to find the quote, but there was a homelessness advocate who looked over this dossier and, you know, said as much as they're like trying to allege that there was like prostitution and drug dealing and all this stuff going on, that most of the evidence amounts to, I think I found it, hang on, most of the evidence amounts to like being poor and in this here it is for you. Bauman, who is this expert, saw no evidence of serious criminal activity that the investigators were alleging. The photos showed, to her eye, innocuous personal activity. There were no eyewitness accounts of crime. She said the criminal histories listed for camp residents suggest at most, quote, a history of addiction and poverty. Which, hey, we're working on decriminalizing addiction. We have not made a whole bunch of progress on decriminalizing poverty. How about that? But yeah, if folks want to call in, would love to hear what your thoughts are on Echelon, about businesses filling in where government entities have left some gaps. Give us a call, 503-231-8187. I'm sure Tammy will be back with me.
And we do have our first caller on the line.
Oh, please.
Martin, are you there with us? Martin, can you hear us? All right, no problem. We can move on ahead. Althea, go ahead. I have a couple of callers on the line.
All right, we will get them set up momentarily. Want to do a quick shout out that this is our end of year drive time. If you love KBOO, now is a great time to support us. We're trying to raise $45,000 by December 31st. You can text to donate. You can text KBOO to 44321, or you can check out our website, kboo.fm/give, or just kboo.fm, click on that donate button, and help us out with the end of year drive. We really appreciate your support.
I think we got another caller on the line. Hello, caller.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, I'm okay.
Yes, we can.
So, yeah, I have, like, some kind of personal insight just from kind of putting the pieces together and like hearing the story. And Echelon, that was kind of the key phrase. And I didn't know what it meant when I heard it back when I heard it. And now it's all making sense as far as the video recording that's, I guess, happening. I haven't read the entire article at all, but I've heard bits and pieces of the, you know, ongoing discussion about this subject. And there's something actually, it's multi-layered, like you're saying, and there's also a very kind of bizarre, I guess you could say, group that are exploiting and very much part of this to profit off of the images, the video, and the viewing of this like humiliation that these people are like being, like, you know, subjugated to by just way of living, like how, what they're going through right now. But it's in a way, it's being almost like pornographized. And I don't know how to kind of describe how it's being redistributed on basically the black market, like the what is it called, the dark web. So there's another underlying element to it that the officials are aware of it. The business owners that have, you know, taken part in this, I don't believe have a clue or even, you know, inclination of that part of it. So they're basically being used as a pawn to do someone else's bidding.
Yeah, and it's for nefarious.
What's that?
And you've come across these videos in the past, and you recognize Echelon from that?
So the Echelon was something, was a word that was spoken by someone that I, you know, have personal, you know, I've had, I know this person, and it didn't mean anything to me when it was said, because this was several months ago. I would say like back in May or June. And so fast forwarding to now and to what's going on, the controversy really makes sense. Mm-hmm. In regards to this individual and what, you know, it just it falls right there and into like the niche, I guess you could say. It's like
right turning it into fetish.
It's right. Serving a very particular part of, you know, whoever interests, but it's fetish, right. Almost. I don't know how to, you know, put it into other terms, yeah. Because it's almost like, and who's getting off on it and who's gaining from that? You know what I mean? Like, it's vile and it's like beyond comprehension of any, you know, average person, because most people don't think in that realm.
Mm-hmm.
As far as that being entertainment for them.
Right. Well, Caller, thank you so much for chiming in here. We really do appreciate you chatting with us today, and I hope you have a good rest of your day. I think you have a great point, you know, about it becoming a cottage industry, that there is money in this kind of thing, whether that is, you know, who's willing to pay for it, or who, you know, as this caller was saying, wants to view that kind of thing. We do have another caller, Martin. How's it going, Martin?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, hey, how's it going?
Oh, it's going okay. I just wanted to thank you for bringing this topic up. It's very obvious to anybody that lives in Portland that there's a humanitarian crisis happening in this town and that people are landing on the street. And, you know, the thing is, I know there's probably criminal elements among the homeless people. And I would say the homeless people are the ones that are most vulnerable to this criminal element, not anybody else. I mean, they have to live amongst people that may not have good intentions. And I just think that, thank you for bringing this thing about private security guards up. I hadn't heard anything about it, but, you know, it's a topic that should be considered again and again and again, because it's right in front of our face. And there are people, because of the high rents, there are people that are losing their apartments and they have no other place to go. I mean, if they try to go to a waiting list somewhere, you know, they got to wait 2 years, maybe 3 years, could be 6 years to get into a real home. And, these people land up on the street too. You know, I would be on the street myself if it wasn't for the fact that I have a subsidized apartment. Mm. So, you know, it's just a awful situation. And thank you for bringing this topic up.
Thank you, Martin. I appreciate it. And yes, I want to emphasize what you said. Definitely the people that are most vulnerable are the people that are living in these elements. And, I appreciate you bringing that up. Yeah. Althea?
Do we have another caller that we can squeeze in these last few minutes?
I think that we... Hold on a second. I think that we may. Let me see if I can do this right. And we do. I think we have Mitch on the line.
Yeah, Mitch, yeah.
Hey, good to hear from you.
Yeah, I have sent. I generally send out this email newsletter about things that there's a paucity of coverage of, and the people on my email list are generally people who teach at universities and do the research, and independent journalists who can't get their views out there. And when I started looking at homelessness, and I do send you Althea, and some other people in your news department these emails from the Lay Low Studios media discussion list as well, there's two words missing from this discussion. And if you could get Sam Adams up in front of a microphone and have the Columbia University scholar Saskia Sassen right there facing him, what Ms. Sassen would say is what she said to a Swedish documentary filmmaker who made the hit of the 2019 International Film Festival circuit, a movie called Push, about this global problem of non-affordable housing in major cities around the world. And those two words are housing first. It's a policy that was discussed first in the 1980s in Canada. It was not implemented in Canada. It has since become implemented in Finland. It points out that this is a national problem. It cannot be solved on a local level. And it has to do with the root issue of turning control over to market forces, because the scarcity principle that drives market forces is what creates not housing for housing's sake, but the building of empty housing units for speculation's sake. So if you could just call Ms. Professor Sassen at Columbia University, she doesn't get sourced by many American news people, I can tell you, and put her in a room with Sam Adams, who's been mayor of Portland when this housing crisis actually metastasized, and before that as the aide to Vera Katz, who also did nothing about this, then we might start talking about why we can't talk about housing first as a policy. And I recommend all your listeners go online and type in housing first, look at the TED Talks, look at the talks in many languages around the world, see where it's working, see what doesn't work, and let's proceed seriously about this problem.
Thank you so much, Mitch. Yeah, those are great points. I can probably link a couple of those on our show notes, kb.fm/thegap. Great to hear from you, Mitch. We are going to have to wrap things up. at the moment, just a couple moments left. I want to thank everybody who called in, everybody who listened today. We talked about the OPB investigation into the security firm, private security firm Echelon, and we spoke a little bit about the Willamette Week article on Ridwell. Both those reporting pieces will be on our website, kbu.fm/thegap. You can also, of course, search them up yourself. I find that we both found them to be pretty good reads, and some interesting perspectives on this kind of these kind of issues. And before we go, also want to mention that KBU is in the end of year drive right now. We are trying to raise $45,000 by December 31st, and we would love your support doing that. We are trying to have, you know, important conversations on this radio station, and we want to make it accessible to folks. And so that's, if you're into that, if you want to support that, you can go to kbu.fm/give or text KBU to 44321 to support us in this end of year drive. It makes a big difference for us.
Definitely. And we appreciate everyone and everything that you do for the community. And we are here to serve the community. Huge, huge thank you to Jill and Christopher for donating. It's really you that make us be. So I appreciate everything. If you want to donate again, that's kbo.fm/give or 44321, excuse me, or type in KBU to 44321 on your cellular devices. We are finished for the day. I hope that you just have a great one. Take care of yourselves and each other. We're all that we have, so, you know, we better get our stuff together. Thank you all so much. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
This has been The Gap. Happy birthday, Joe. Goodbye.
Girls, we run this.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
Here goes nothing.